Different day, same problem. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And Barry, it's good to be with you while we record this. I'm sitting here on my back porch on an exceedingly cold night. I think it's down to around 12 degrees here.
So I take it you don't have the windows open.
I do not have the windows open. I have an interesting situation here with my dog. You know my dog, Rufus.
Yes.
Rufus is a snow dog, and he would prefer it right now. He'd like it to be 20 below zero and the snow falling.
Of course.
And he'll take it at 6 degrees with very little snow. But he prefers the snow. So we're using him as a weather gauge. And I can tell you it's cold outside because he's very energetic. And so I'm sitting here with a hot cup of tea while we record.
Well, very good. Chuck, sometimes on this program, we just have to sit and shake our heads. Because it's like the same players come around to do the same things, even after they've shown by their earlier actions that it isn't working. And this time around's no exception. We've talked on this program before. Matter of fact, it was just about 2 years ago, and I know this program's not that old, but just 2 years ago, about this time of the year, our United States Congress did something that hadn't been done in Congress for, I don't know, probably since the first reading of this document in the 1700s. Maybe it was read after that. But the point is, in the last Congress, the House got up and they read the Constitution out loud in the well of the House, on the floor, all the way through, from the preamble all the way to the end. Now, they did that, Chuck, as a precursor to setting a rule. And that rule was that any member of the House who introduced a bill had to cite the authority in the Constitution for the action that they're proposing in their legislation. Now, that sounds like a constitutionalist and a conservative's dream. Now, doesn't it, Chuck?
Well, it does. Unfortunately, it has instead exposed something I don't think that Congress wanted to have exposed.
Which is, well, what we fight against and the reason why we at the Institute for Principle of Policy teach a little course called Institute on the Constitution, and that is to eliminate a disease in our country called constitutional ignorance. Constitutional ignorance is a fatal disease, Chuck, because if you contract it, you do silly things like spend beyond your ability to pay, give yourselves powers that don't exist, and believe that somebody else should pay for all of it. It's a very debilitating disease, and it usually affects members of Congress. Now, that what they did, though, and ladies and gentlemen, I'll leave it to you to determine how well you think this operation took to rid them of the disease. But they read the Constitution out loud, one after the other. Each of them took like a line or a sentence or whatever and came up, all 435 of them, I believe. Maybe a few decided not to do it on certain principles or grounds, or maybe the fact that some of them couldn't read it. I don't know. It is pretty high reading, especially if you have less than an eighth grade education. So, which I'm not accusing any of our congressmen of having less than an eighth grade education, but I'm talking about eighth graders in the 1790s.
Yeah, that's right. Highly educated people. I always laugh when people tell me they can't read the Federalist Papers. John Eidsmo and I basically have used the same line for years. And I say, gee, that's completely understandable. It was written for people, farmers in New York, who had an eighth grade education. So congratulations if you can't read it. Now, I agree up front, the language isn't exactly the same as we use it today. But a few hours of sitting down and reading it, and you pretty much got it down pat. It's not a problem.
Yep, it really isn't. And you'd think that our Congress, not only did they read the document, Chuck, but they passed this rule that said, hey, you have got to give the constitutional backing for your bills. Now, you would think they would have had some practice at this, Chuck, because over the course of the 112th Congress, there were over 3,000 pieces of legislation introduced. That's 3,000 chances, and if you figure out there's 435 members of the House, you're talking about at least 4 to 5 chances per member of practicing this, of citing the section and clause of the Constitution, the article, section, and clause of the Constitution, which gives them their authority. Now, this is what we do in our Constitution class, ladies and gentlemen. We ask you questions. Chuck has developed an incredible learning tool called the Constitution Game, where we put scenarios forward. It's like proposing legislation. But the point is, you have to determine whether or not the proposal or the scenario is constitutionally allowable or not, and if it is, what article, section, and clause gives the power, and if not, what article, section, and clause prohibits Congress from acting or other actors, whether it's the executive branch or the judiciary. So kudos to Chuck, and I can't wait until he copyrights all of this and we get it out, actual game, and put it on an app, because I think it'll take off like wildfire. I think I can figure out 435 sales we might have here, Chuck.
Well, I want to bet.
Well, maybe not, but maybe if we offered them at a 2-for-1 special, maybe we can get some sales off of it. But here's the kicker. According to the Washington Times, Stephen Dinnan, who wrote a news article on this issue, and this kind of got buried because he wrote it last week, right around the time of the President Obama's showdown on guns and leading up to the inaugural speech, which we're going to talk about on a later day here. This kind of got lost in translation, but of course, we've been holding on to it for a few days, wanting to talk about it, because we think it's very interesting, because what happened with the implementation of this new rule? Well, less than inspiring is how Stephen Dinnan puts it. He said that basically many lawmakers ignored the rule. In other words, they filed bills and didn't even bother to cite the constitutional clause. And I think we kind of figured out a reason for that, Chuck, didn't we?
Oh, there's a very good reason for it. Because as we've talked about on so many pieces of legislation, there is no constitutional authority for that legislation.
Exactly. And so maybe they were just being honest and saying, well, there's no authority, so I'm not citing anything. So here we go. We're going to introduce it. Can you pass it tomorrow?
And so many things now, we want it passed quickly. In fact, that is the hallmark of bad legislation.
Yes, it is. As fast as you can ramp it up. And does anybody remember Obamacare?
Well, exactly. And of course, think about it in terms of New York's recent ban on semi-automatic weapons and high-capacity magazines, quote-unquote high-capacity magazines. The fact is that the governor, Governor Cuomo, and the leader of the House, I think, in New York, came right out and said the reason we were able to ram this legislation through is we did it so quickly that the NRA couldn't ramp up any opposition. Now, you know what that means, Barry. That means that nobody could see it coming. So all the people, all the constituents who were gun owners who liked owning high-capacity magazines and semi-automatic rifles and pistols, their voice was drowned out. The fact is that their voice was ignored in this, and that's exactly what people want. One of the big calls these days, oh, how horrible that we have all this partisanship in Congress. That's code language, Barry.
Yes, it is.
That's code language for the other side doesn't agree with me. And therefore, we will drop this, we will have an end to partisanship when the other side drops their opposition to my agenda. That is the definition of partisanship in a legislative body. The other side doesn't agree with me. As soon as they come to an agreement with me, then partisanship is over.
Right. And then they're bipartisan, even though we're only going one direction with it.
Exactly. And those of us who might enjoy owning high-capacity magazines and semi-automatic rifles and pistols, shotguns, whatever, our voices are drowned out for, quote-unquote, the good of society. Whenever you hear the phrase good of society and there's no kind of constitutional backing, run for your life and hide your wallet while you're at it, because there's going to be a tax to go along with the thing that's good for society. One of the things we're seeing in this article, which we're going to post a link to, it's called Congress Has a Constitution Problem. Many don't understand the document. Barry, that is an understatement.
Well, I think it's a very much an understatement, because Dinnan gives a couple of examples of lawmakers actually putting some of these statements on their bills. Now, the Washington Times, they did a study of 3,764 bills. Okay? That number is astounding, but that means that your average representative was putting forward about 9 bills per member. Well, that's pretty big. That's a lot of work. Now, basically, he said the most commonly cited authority was Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, right? Which is the power to tax and spend. Well, honestly, that's a little frightening that the vast majority of the bills were taxing and spending bills.
Well, Barry, it's a complete misunderstanding. Well, let's put it this way. What is the best way to interpret the Constitution?
The Constitution itself.
Exactly. What's the best way to interpret the Bible?
Well, the Bible itself. The Bible interprets the Bible.
You look at the document as a whole.
That's right.
You cut and paste to make it say what you want it to say. Again, Barry, constitutional hermeneutics isn't that different from biblical hermeneutics. In other words, you don't take phrases out of it like the Bible and say, Judas hanged himself, go and do likewise, and what you do, do quickly. Because when you take specific places out of the Bible, you can make it say anything you want it to. That's not the way this works. You have to take the document as a whole, and the same thing goes with the Constitution. Okay, Article 1, Section 8 basically has sections in there about, sure, you can raise taxes, quote-unquote, for the general welfare, and that's where this article actually gets it wrong.
Yes, it does. No,
you can't do spending for the general welfare. That's not the purpose. The general welfare has become something different than what was meant by it originally, and the general welfare meant for the good of all the states in their entirety. Now, tell me again how the general welfare has morphed into the specific welfare. In other words, the welfare of specific individuals. This is what's being cited to be allowed to run some of these phony baloney federal programs. Oh, well, we're promoting the general welfare. Well, no, you're not. You're promoting the specific welfare of certain individuals for the purpose of garnering votes. And you'll find that so many of these things use a twisted understanding of the Constitution. For instance, we all know that federal power is actually limited by Article 1, Section 8. And yet, the way that the Hamiltonian-style governors who we tend to elect these days understand it is that the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, is a general empowering thing, and everything not specifically prohibited to it is allowed, when we know from the Constitutional Convention that the general thought pattern was all the powers that aren't specifically delegated are limited or prohibited. That's where we've gone wrong. We look at the Constitution as an empowering document when, in fact, it's a limiting document.
Well, I think that's evident because in the analysis the Washington Times did, 56 of those bills actually cited the 10th Amendment to the Constitution as their constitutional authority for pushing federal laws. And, Chuck, I hope most of our listeners would be painfully aware of this as many times as we've gone over it. The 10th Amendment says that the power is not specifically delegated to the federal government, which is the Article 1, Section 8 powers, nor prohibited by the Constitution to the states, which is Article 1, Sections 9 and 10, are reserved to the states or to the people. That means Congress can't legislate in those areas. So citing the 10th Amendment as your legislative authority for your federal legislation is missing the point entirely.
Well, I like what this fellow said, Doug Kendall, founder of the Constitutional Accountability Center. He says, quote, "I wouldn't have thought the 10th Amendment, which is about not legislating, or the 1st Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law, would be fertile ground for legislative authority."
It's incredible. This is just, but the point is that even somebody who should understand the Constitution better, which is Bob Goodlatte, who is the House Judiciary Committee chairman, Republican from Virginia, who actually organized the first ever reading of the Constitution as a whole in Congress. So, Chuck, I was wrong. It wasn't even read out loud as a whole in the first Congress. But that was the first time in the 112th it had ever been done, has done it again, and they actually did it last week on Tuesday, where they read the document all over again. But Representative Goodlatte has basically used that shortcut of Article 1, Section 8 for a number of his bills. And his bills really didn't have anything to do with taxing, regulating Congress, coining money, or overseeing the military.
Exactly. And that's the problem, Barry. These guys, again, take a small section. They'll take a clause and say, see, this gives us the power to do this, when in fact, the entirety of Article 1, Section 8 says, okay, you have this power to do this in these specific areas. And instead, they're taking a look at it. And let's not kid ourselves. It's not just, you know, somebody will say, oh, those darn Democrats, they always come up with a way to do this and that and another thing. Don't blame Democrats. It's not just Democrats. It's Republicans. Neither party understands the Constitution.
Well, that much is fairly obvious because, again, it's a different day, but they're still doing the same thing, Chuck. They're reading the document and paying no attention to how it all works together. Well, basically what we consider with Scripture, it's called eisegesis, where you take it out of context so that it fits your already preconceived notion of what it should say or should apply to.
Well, we need to coin a phrase, constitutional eisegesis.
I'm not sure if we can coin it. Somebody else probably has, but we could call it conegesis.
It's true. And I don't know if anybody else has used that. I've not seen it used, so our apologies to anybody who may have come up with that before we did. But it is eisegetical. Now, that being said, Barry, guess what?
We are out of time.
Join us again tomorrow for another interesting discussion on principles and policies.